This is a Cyber Union talk show for June 20th, 2011, Wiki Research Rant.
Welcome to the show. My name is Steven, reporting from deep inside corporate-controlled America and soon to be Guatemala.
And I am Walton in Glasgow, Scotland. Steven, what are you doing in Guatemala?
Well, I'm not there yet, but I will be. By the time people listen to the show, I'll be experiencing my two-week vacation trip to Guatemala. A friend of mine has a school down there, a language school in San Marcos, where I'm going to go learn Spanish. And it's going to be pretty cool. He's a member of the struggle, so to speak, in the sense that he's done a lot of worker rights for moving to Guatemala, and he still is a friend of labor. But I'm going to be down there for a week, going to visit a little spot in Mexico called San Cristobal de las Chasas, de las Casas. Ooh, my Spanish is not that good. Hopefully it'll be a lot better when I get back. And then I'll be going back again for another week of classes before returning on the 25th of June. At that point, we should be able to record our next show without any glitch. And I'm going to try to, we're going to hopefully try to record a show from Guatemala itself. So it's looking like a fun trip. I haven't had an actual vacation in I think about 4 years, and I haven't done a week or 2 weeks for that matter. I don't think I've ever done that, actually.
Okay. I recommend it. Holidays are good.
We don't have that many in this country, unfortunately. So what are we going to talk about today?
Actually, something that we just started, something that we're trying out, which we think is worth a shot, is something called Flutter, which is, it's crowdsourced microfinance. It's a little button that you put on your website, and if people like your content, they can click Flutter, and if they have a Flutter account, you get a tiny amount of money. And yeah, we essentially put that, we've just put that on the Cyber Union's website as an experiment to see if it works. We quite like the idea of getting funding from a wide range of sources rather than trying to go to a single union or a single organization. And we don't need a lot of money either. Cyber Unions doesn't cost very much. We're paying for it all ourselves, but it's not massively expensive. If any of you have Flutter accounts and you are keen to donate a euro or two to keeping us on the air, then do flatter us.
Yes, certainly. I think it's a pretty cool tool. I've seen a number of different sites that I listen to and read that have Flutter accounts, and I appropriately support the ones that I like, and I think it's a pretty cool little idea. It doesn't really require a bank, and microfinance, I think, is a whole other topic for another day, but it's kind of cool. I like it. Some of you guys will see that on the cyberunions.org website when you go visit. You may have seen it before even coming to listen to the show.
And as you know, we are building an open source labor movement here at Cyber Unions, and we think that the best way to do that is to share good practice. Sometimes unions can be very tribal and hold on to the best ideas and not want other unions to steal their ideas or steal their members. We don't think that's very helpful behavior. And we want to talk about some ways of sharing good practice this time around. Stephen, what do you think?
I think that's a great idea. And in fact, there's an article that the Labor Notes had done on this very topic with SEIU. They had actually created a call center in Detroit, Michigan.
What's the SEIU?
The Service Employees International Union. Sorry about that. I get All right. a little bit American specific on the labor movement here, and that's a very good point. But SEIU is a large service union. They have actually gotten into struggles with a number of different other unions on that same topic of stealing members from others. But that's not what I'm discussing here, and that's again another issue for another day. But they did actually try to create a call center to handle union questions by the members, and they did this at the national level so they could have local unions adopt it, and that would mean that they would be informing their members, if you have questions about your contract and things like that, call this number, and they'll explain it to you. If you have a grievance that needs to be filed, they had a grievance team that would look through the contract, which sounds great in practice, I guess, in one sense, but...
Sounds very 21st century, yeah?
Yes, it does. The unfortunate thing is that the failure of it and the lack of success of it came about because of a leaked document, according to the article at least, that came out discussing the problems that they ran into, is that a lot of the locals didn't like it because they were spending money to pay for the call center, and even though they were able to devote some more resources at the local level, the they were spending more and they were not getting the services that they thought they were going to receive. Whereas the training for the program in like, in a Pasadena, California location, the call center people only had 3 weeks of training. And in that 3 weeks, you can't learn a contract and know the contract and know how to look it up very quickly and efficiently and effectively. But this was something that, I mean, it seems like an intriguing idea, but the way it came and was introduced is very backwards in my mind, because it came from the top and it didn't come from the bottom. And I think that's a big difference is when it's said from the top and they push out this idea, they're kind of forcing all the locals to pick it up and there's going to be resistance to it. And that's exactly what happened. A local union, SEIU 615 in Massachusetts, where I am, actually discontinued the service almost after adopting it because they didn't see, they weren't getting the benefits that they were promised. And though some of the ideas of the call center was to meet multiple language differences, which I think has been a issue, not an issue, but something that the labor movement has always dealt with, those multiple languages. I don't know if this is the best means to achieve that goal at the end, but that's me. But again, going back to where we're talking here, none of the experience was shared. So like other unions started adopting it, but they didn't know the problems with it. They didn't know.
And
the
it's not a cheap resource, is it? If you want to set up a call center, you need to spend quite a bit of money.
Yeah, that's very true. And I mean, their location that they picked was specific, is Detroit, Michigan. Detroit, if you don't know, is in economic turmoil. The unemployment rate, I don't know the exact numbers, but I believe it's in the 20s, in 20 percentiles. It used to be the car industry, the center of the world for the U.S. and globally when the U.S. had such a large car industry. And now it's just become, you know, boarded up homes to... The only industry left is like the executive locations for GM and Ford, I think, in Michigan, which isn't even in Detroit, actually. GM's headquarters is right outside of Detroit in Dearborn. Anyway, the point being is they were trying to develop jobs for an area that was hit hard by the economy. And that's good and all and well. The unfortunate problem is that the practice of it seemed very top down and not bottom up. And that's, I think, where the problem lies.
Because it also seems to me that if you asked a lot of ordinary union members whether they wanted someone in a call center to deal with their complaint or whether they wanted someone locally in their workplace, they probably would have said that an experienced shop steward or workplace rep who actually knows the workplace and knows the managers and knows the contracts would be more useful. Because for me, one of the experiences of consumer capitalism that I find most frustrating is when I need to deal with a company that I have a relationship with, whether it's a utility company or they're providing my internet or phone or whatever it is, and you have to deal with them through a call center. Very often the call center is far away, often the call center is in another country, and you feel like the organization is keeping you at arm's length. You are a problem to them because you have questions and queries, and so it almost feels like they've outsourced the problem solving to a call center that deals with you. And as a union member, I think I might feel the same way about phoning up a union call center and getting someone there who's had 3 weeks of training. You know, who knows where they come from? They might not really have a strong union background. It might just be a call center job that came up. And I also think that there are different models of organizing, of trade unionism. There's an organizing model and a servicing model. I think the servicing model was very popular at one point in the 80s and 90s. And I think it has largely failed to arrest the decline in strength of unions. And there's been a turn back to organizing. And services, of course, are important to members. But in order to build strong unions, you need to organize people. And I think in order to organize people, you need to have activists in the workplace who are confident and who can deal with members' questions and grievances and disciplinaries and the complaints and issues that come up at the workplace and build local confidence in the strength of the union. To me, that's fairly straightforward stuff. So, you know, it's disappointing that we weren't able to take that on board, but it's something that doesn't surprise me that much because I've seen a few other cases in the past of unions being sold an expensive techno fix to a problem. You know, they hear that there's a technological solution to all their woes. They give someone loads and loads of money. They go and develop something, and guess what? It was not as good as they hoped it would be.
Yeah.
So, yeah, the lesson I think is let's share our experiences. By all means, I think a brave step to try and open a call center, an interesting one, and you know they. I think any union that tries something new is to be applauded, but let's be open about the experience so that other unions don't make expensive mistakes.
And I think that carry on with that, actually, Walton, is, you know, one of the things that I'm familiar with seeing in at least the open source communities, but also in music and also some literature pieces, is the use of Creative Commons and protecting the material, but in a way that's still accessible and usable by others. And I think that's something that the labor union should be using. And one of the places that I see it a lot is Wikipedia. If you ever go to the bottom of a Wikipedia page, it says, you know, this is Creative Commons, which for those that don't know, Creative Commons is kind of in a nutshell. How did I get in this nutshell? Is creating a public domain of content for countries that don't have it, but for countries that's public domain, that is, but for countries that do have public domain, it still protects the material. So attribution or credit for what is done mm-hmm. has to be given. And I think it's something that is within the open source communities too, since we do talk about that so much, where they do give credit for the work that's done.
In fact, can I take a step back and say that for me, Creative Commons is an attempt to create a legal framework around a much older idea. And that's the idea of there is a commons. There is something that is common to all of us as human beings on this planet that we share. And as working people, we've seen the enclosure and privatization of the commons has been an ongoing process that's happened over hundreds of years. Hundreds of years ago, most land was held in common and people could do what they liked with it. They could grow crops or graze animals. And increasingly, that came under crown or state control. It was fenced off. It was privatized. And the same process is happening. It's still happening in the physical world. There's, if you look at attempts to privatize water a few generations ago, the idea that a company could own water was completely ludicrous. Now we take for granted that we have private water companies owning the water. And this privatization is creeping even into our cultural life and into software. And there's an attempt to privatize more and more of our existence. So the commons movement is a political, economic, and cultural movement to reclaim the commons and to assert that some things are common property and we agree to share them. And so for me, Creative Commons is an alternative to copyright. Instead of copywriting something, you can put a Creative Commons license on it. And typically the license is some rights reserved, and then you can read the detail and it'll say exactly what those rights are. It's basically the copyleft idea, but a lot more specific, because you can put a Creative Commons license on something and say, we've created this, you can do whatever you like with it, you can rip it off, remix it, sell it, whatever, we don't mind. Or you can be a lot more specific and say, you're welcome to use this content, you don't have to pay us, however, please attribute it to us and please don't sell it on and make any money off it. So there's a whole range of licenses that you can choose, and you can actually go to the Creative Commons website and read about the licenses and choose something that's appropriate for your product and register it. So Cyber Unions is registered on Creative Commons website. There is a Creative Commons link on the Cyber Union site, so you can how you license the resources. But basically, because it's Creative Commons, anything on Cyber Unions, you are welcome to help yourself to. We would like it if you attribute it back to us so that people know where it came from. But you're welcome to use the material if it helps you in any way to organize. That's why we do it. And we think that's an important step to take. And that's why I find it quite disappointing that certainly in the UK, a lot of unions have lined up behind copyright.
That's not good.
Which the reason they do it is because I think the current economic model sees digital products as commodities that need to be sold for a profit, and in order to protect the wages of those workers producing those products, journalists, for example, or musicians, unions have insisted on protecting copyright. Now, this is a long discussion that we probably don't have time for today, but I think that economic model is out of date. I don't think that, certainly for things which should be in the public domain, like campaigning and trade unions, I don't think copyright is appropriate. I think we need to be sharing best practice and sharing our resources with each other.
That's a very good point. And to not get into the economic discussion, but one of the ways that this Creative Commons can be used for the trade unions and is really in the realm of research, I think, in the matter of, like, so we saw that the unions in the SEIU was working with, you know, this call center, but they didn't share any of that experience. And that's one thing, but there's a lot of research material. Now, I don't know what your experience has been, but when I worked for a union, the research that I did there, I was actually kind of dabbing into Wikipedia at this time. And this was when I first started doing this research, was 2006, and Wikipedia wasn't huge by today's standards, but it was big. It was known. People had used it. It was critical because, you know, when I was a graduate student, I also graded undergrads papers. So if any student ever cited Wikipedia without actually going to the actual citation, it was automatic grades off. But that beside the point, it was definitely relevant. But I was looking for research because there's a lot of stuff on companies and industries that it's a lot of work to do. And there's no, like, I had done research on Whole Foods, the company. It's a US-based company that does Whole Food grocery stores. And they sell Whole Foods and they sell under the organic flag, and they sound all good and earthy and everything like that. But the research that I ended up doing showed that they were entirely anti-union. The head of the company is this diehard right-wing libertarian who doesn't believe in unions, and they fought off all the union efforts. And there's all this material about them that I had researched. And after I was done with it, there was no place for me to put it. There was no place I could put it for other people to use. Mm-hmm. And I just saw, like, one, I mean, I'd be happy to get credit for the research that's done. That's perfectly fine. But this is helpful information about this company specifically, about what they're going to do and their model. And their model hasn't changed since the research I did, and that was 5 years ago. Like,
So you need some kind of ideas repository then?
That's the thing. Like, I need a place to put the material that I'm researching, and for other researchers that are out there, because I know that there's some that want to hold on to their research, hold on to their model and everything like that, but it doesn't make sense. It doesn't benefit the labor movement. It doesn't benefit us as people to hold and retract that information instead of sharing that information. There's mm-hmm. so much research out there, even just generally in like graduate research, there's so much stuff on industries and everything else that would be so helpful if there's a place to put it, if it's going to be helping the labor.
So you're really talking about taking an open source approach to doing research as well?
Yeah, definitely. I think it's needed because it's going to, I mean, here's the thing. Capitalism says it's efficient. It tells us that it's the most efficient system out there, that you can't beat it. There's nothing that can do it better. Well, here's a way of doing it better. It's a matter of combining and cooperative and collaborating the research by multiple different people, so you don't repeat the same exact step over and over again, which is what capitalism always does. If it fails, they repeat it and repeat it and repeat it and insist that this is new and this is efficient. Well, if we're going to show that there's a better system out there, if we're going to show that there's a better economy that we can build from the ground up and not have these capitalist pigs that have all the money and decide this is how everything is done, then you know what? This is the way to show them that they are wrong and we have a better way to do it. And if we can share just on a research level, campaign levels, understanding what companies are going to do, this material is helpful. I mean, I know that there's this concern by many in the labor movement that, you know, whatever research you do, you have to hide it from the bosses and hide it from those capitalists because they're going to use it against you. Guess what? They already know what research we're going to find out. They know, and we know what research they're going to do. We know their tactics. They know our tactics. If we put all our tactics out there, they're never going to be able to figure them all out. They're going to be spending so much money and wasting it, which is then going to be a campaign in and of itself. Stop wasting your money trying to research what we're going to do to you. Just give in. We want the keys. We want to run the whole thing. Just give it to us. That's my feeling, at least. I don't know about you, but...
that's good stuff there, Stephen. You're on fine form tonight. It's good to see a passionate defense of an alternative. How are we going to do this practically? What kind of tools, are there any tools that we can use just now? You know, assuming we can win this argument in our unions and get an agreement to work collaboratively on campaigns, what sort of tools should we look at using?
Well, I mean, first, like any research that's putting out there, you got to just put the creative license on it, just so people know what they can do with that material if it is out there. And then secondly, you know, we already have Wikipedia, and Wikipedia is a wealth of information, and they try to take a non-biased perspective, which is fine. As long as you have factual information, I think it's legitimate information that can be put up there. You need to have sources. You can't do opinions and things like that. But, you know, for labor unions that don't have the resources to develop other things, which we'll get into, Wikipedia is a perfect place to start. Putting up pages on
there. In fact, I would say Wikipedia is the first place you need to start, because for a lot of people, if something's not on Wikipedia or it doesn't exist, it's become the default repository of everything in existence on the planet. if a journalist wants to research something, often the first place they go is Wikipedia, or if a student or just anyone wants to find out about something, they'll go to Wikipedia and see what it says. And it's actually worth spending a bit of time on the union pages in Wikipedia to see how good they are, because some of them are excellent, but others are not so much. There are really important industrial relations concepts, things which I think could help trade unionists understand what they're trying to do much better, help them organize better. And if they were captured properly in Wikipedia, it would be a really, really useful resource. So I guess this is a call to all of us, ourselves included, but to anyone listening, edit Wikipedia. Create a new article if there's one missing, or find an article which has something lacking in it and edit it. It's not very difficult. You can learn how to do it in a short space of time. And it's worth doing. Learn how to use Wikipedia, learn how wiki software works, and let's start creating some quality resources on Wikipedia to start with.
And that's a great point. And that's the first place, you're right, to go is look at how that's done, because a lot of people think that Wikipedia is hard, and they have worked to make it simple. They've tried to make every page very easy to edit, even for people who don't have access. It's very easy to edit, and I think that that's important to start with. I think another tool that like would be great for even, I mean, this is something that the National could do, and this would be the right thing to do, is the National Unions, that is to create a wiki for that union or for the industries that they're already a part of, and creating this this collaborative space that, and I think there's a benefit being separated from Wikipedia, because then they don't have to deal with some of the non-biased aspects, because obviously if you're doing a lot of labor research, it's going to be pretty well biased, and it's hard to defend that within the Wikipedia communities. You're going to spend a lot of time doing that if you do so. But I think this is something that can be easily done. I mean, there's MediaWiki, which we were just looking at before, which if you want to say anything, I understand it's, you can install it onto a server, and that basically becomes the wiki on that server. Is that right?
Yeah, MediaWiki is the same software that runs Wikipedia, and Wikipedia is run on free and open source software, and you're free to download that software yourself and install it on your own server. It's probably not very difficult. If you get server space, a lot of hosts actually have the package ready to install, so you can just a one-click install and create your own wiki and use that to build up a resource of information. And I know that that's a big step for some unions to put all that information out in the public sphere, but it is also possible to have private wikis if, you know, there's a real reason that you need to work on collaboratively on a project that you keep within your union. So, you know, you can look at that option as well. But I think this idea of looking outside the narrow organization and creating a much more pluralist approach to taking the fight against corporations forward, I think it's really important.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And I'm just thinking about this more and more, and I think back to like where it made a connection to me. I was a student of labor studies. I was taking a course in the communication department where I read a book called Digital Capitalism. And it was a phenomenal book at that time when it was written. And it was talking about the communication industries, the technology, and how it's impacting workplaces. And it was really interesting, because that would never have been a book I would have read from a labor union perspective. But what I saw there is like there is a collaboration. There is this need to connect from other perspectives, because there's very well research done on industries with a very similar critical perspective that is missing, that could help the entire labor movement as a whole. And I don't see the benefit of keeping those restrictions up. I would almost say that we should even be looking towards, you know, books that are written about labor. Work towards making that a creative commons. Work towards making that accessible for anybody and everybody. And I know there's an industry there. There's money to be made from it. But that's in production of books. That's making the actual hand book to hold. When it comes to something that's not tangible, I think there's a benefit to creating the availability for people who can get to it. And I know there's a whole privilege issue with that too. But I think...
Yeah.
I think that's better than trying to say, all right, if you want to get this information, you have to buy this hard-covered book that's going to cost you even more than it is to try to get somewhere to get internet access to read it at the library or something to that extent.
Yeah. I think that's crucially important, because for me, one of the problems is that industrial relations as a field is huge. There's a huge amount of information, but to a large extent, it stays in the universities. And the reason is, if you want to read any of the industrial relations journals, you need to subscribe to them. And not that many trade unionists have subscriptions. You'll find the trade union research departments probably do, but an ordinary trade unionist who wants to do some genuine research to find out about something is going to hit a paywall whenever they try to do some research. Now, there are some valiant attempts to get behind and around that. Something which I think is particularly cool is the Open Courseware Consortium, which is it takes a Creative Commons approach to educational material and makes that freely available. Yeah, we still need to do something to break down that wall of privilege and get that information out there so that activists can use it to inform themselves to fight better campaigns.
Yeah, I think that's great. And I think that's even for people in so many different parts of this country. Like, if you can get to it electronically, whether it's on your smartphone or whatever, and share it and not feel that you're going to be, you know, jeopardizing some legal action because of whatever reason that somebody's going to charge you up, hold you up on copyright materials. I think it's really important that mm-hmm. they take advantage of it and make use of these tools that are out there. It's not even a tool. I mean, we're talking about a licensing agreement here that has been brought forward by people that are coming from the open source communities to begin with when it comes to the licensing mm-hmm. they have on their work, which I know I'm speaking over some people in this case, but when it comes to open source, it is about a license, and that's what the case is. It's about a license that tries to create it to be a public domain so anybody can touch it and do whatever they want. Not to say that you can go and take down things that are in the public domain, so don't go taking down statues or anything. It's just for everybody to appreciate. Yeah. So,
I'd say that if you take one thing from today's show, put something back into the public domain, give something back to the commons, and next time you create something, put a Creative Commons license on it and let other people share it and use it.
I don't think there's any better way to put it, and I think that's a great way to kind of end the show. I don't know if there's anything else you want to talk about, Walton.
No, I think we've covered a subject which is very important to both of us with some depth and some passion, and I think we'll probably revisit it at some point, but no, I think that's enough.
Great. Well, thank you, everybody, for listening, and look forward to you listening to our next show.
And please keep sending your feedback.
Oh, of course, yes. And we will get to feedback after I get back from Guatemala. Thank you. Goodbye.
All right. Have a good trip.
Thank you.